You're watching Tim Topham TV, the Piano Teachers podcast, and this is episode number 55. G'day everyone, and thanks so much for tuning in again to another episode of Tim Topham TV. This is the show to watch or listen to if you are serious about improving your teaching. It's a place where each week you can learn new strategies from the best teachers around the world. And of course, the best thing is that it's 100% free. You get an hour's training every week for free. My passion is to help teachers teach differently because I know out there are still many, many teachers around the world that just don't know how to break out of that mold that they were perhaps taught of teaching exactly what's written, just teaching reading, maybe preparing students for exams and performances. You know, there is so much more that you can do in piano lessons with students to inspire them and really get them engaged for the rest of their lives. And that's what I want to help you with. So if you're a teacher that wants more help in this area, then you're definitely in the right place. Now, before we get started today, I would love for you to check out Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype, the video course by Melody Payne that I've been talking about all this month in our online teaching month. If you want to be the most forward-thinking and trend-setting teacher in your area, if you're looking to increase your client base, teaching hours and income, and if you need a perfect solution to cut down on makeup lessons, then online teaching is for you. And that's why we've done a real focus on it this month, because there are so many opportunities that come from it. Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype will help you develop the online studio you've always wanted. You'll discover what equipment you need for teaching online, as well as exactly how to set it up for the optimal online teaching and learning experience. You'll also be introduced to policies, payment options, valuable teaching tips, some hints, a list of the pros and cons of online teaching and more, so that you can begin teaching online lessons confidently and professionally right away. Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype also includes exclusive access to a private Facebook community with other online teachers where you can ask questions, you can share video clips, you can get help and chat about online teaching. The video course Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype will answer your questions about online music lessons, help you gain the practical knowledge, skills, and confidence you need to start teaching online, and show you how to enhance your studio, maximize your teaching efforts, set your studio apart, and take it to the next level. To find out more and get a discount at the moment, head to the show notes page for the link. And I can tell you right now, I've just been on to the site that Melody's got there, and in August, she's got this at about half price. This is a real steal. So if you're listening to this in August, and the release date of this is about the 26th or thereabouts of August, you've got about 5 days left. So jump on to the show notes, timtopham.com/episode55, and you'll find all the links. And she's also got a couple of bonus downloads waiting for you there. Now, just before we get into today's content, I do want to talk to you about the live events that have just been announced on timtopham.com. I'm teaming up with one of my Inner Circle expert teachers, Paul Myatt of Forte Music Schools, and we are going to be putting on a roadshow tour of Australia, running one day workshops called Transform Your Piano Teaching. And look, I cannot wait to do these. Paul and I work together really well. We're going to have an absolute blast, and we've got just a limited number of seats at each location because everyone's going to be at an actual piano. So it's going to be really hands-on and great fun-filled day. We're going to talk a lot about improvisation, working with patterns. I'm going to be just basically giving away all my secrets and talking about my teaching toolkit. So talking about the apps I use, the music I love, all the tricks that I've got, the improvisation I do. It's going to be so much fun, and I can't wait to meet lots of both readers and my members at those events. So if you want to find out more about those live events around Australia, head to timtopham.com/transform when you get a chance to jump on your computer. All right, today's podcast is all about online teaching with Sarah Lingua, but we've got a bit of a different lesson today, and it's about cultural difference in online teaching. We've already talked this month about a number of aspects of online teaching, from getting started to getting a bit more complex to putting up lessons online that you can then charge access for. That was last episode with Mike Werter, episode 54. Today, you're going to hear from a piano teacher with 23 years experience. My guest is Sarah Lingua, and she's spent the past 20 years in international communities around Europe and the Middle East, including Saudi Arabia. So she's got a fantastic ear for an experience with teaching and cultural difference when you're teaching online. She specializes in teaching children with learning quirks, especially students with visual processing and vision problems. Having a Bachelor of Science in Engineering has given her a different perspective in teaching piano lessons, and she refers to her studio, she does in this podcast a number of times, as a piano science learning lab. I love this concept because it's what my studio is all about too. Let's test things, let's try them out, see what works. 5 years ago, she started both teaching and taking lessons online and has become adept at teaching students in that way. She's about to convert her entire studio to teaching online lessons because she's returned to the United States this summer and all of her students are now in the Middle East. So you're going to absolutely love hearing about this experience. You know, it's quite unlike any story of piano teaching that I've heard before. We'll find out all about what it's like to live in Saudi Arabia, what piano lessons are like over there, how it works, and how you can potentially expand and open your studio through online teaching to the whole world. And we'll talk about some of the implications of doing that and some tricks and tips as well. So here is my interview with Sarah Lingra. All right, Sarah, welcome to the show today. Great to have you on it.
Thank you.
Now, before we get started, I think you better tell everyone a little bit about your piano teaching adventures from the last and your life adventures from the last few years. You've had some pretty amazing experiences overseas, and this is all going to be connected to our concept of online teaching. But yeah, give us a rundown.
Well, I actually moved overseas about 20 years ago, and I spent 5 years in Copenhagen, and that's where I learned that the market for English-speaking piano teachers when you're working overseas is pretty big. So I taught piano lessons in Copenhagen to an international crowd. And then from there, my husband's Norwegian and never actually lived as a married couple in the United States, moved to Saudi Arabia. And this was right after September 11th. And so things are quite a bit different then, before and after, than they are now. And the majority of my clients initially, I met a piano teacher who was going back to work, so I got her clients. And then over time, there aren't very many piano teachers in Saudi Arabia. They don't have a music curriculum. You can't get visas for music teachers. They don't teach music in the schools. And so the longer I was there, the more local clientele I had. As the word got out, the more adult students I had. We were also involved in clandestine music concerts with the artists all over the world. And the international expat community is quite a bit different than teaching in a local community, because you're not just teaching Americans, you're teaching people from pretty much at every continent except Antarctica. And even though everybody I taught had at least one parent from college education, quite a few of the people I taught, this was the first time that they ever had private music lessons. And in Saudi Arabia, a lot of the local students didn't have music education, but they didn't have the background of you go to your lessons, you practice, and then the delayed gratification of practicing and then having recitals. And then we had also a wide variety of religious backgrounds, and it was just completely different than what you normally see when you're teaching in a rural community in the United States.
Oh, absolutely. I can't even comprehend what it would be like to live in somewhere like Saudi Arabia. I think it would be amazing. It'd be fascinating. It'd be a huge culture shock, I would guess. So when you were living over there, you're talking about the expat community. So that's international people living in Saudi Arabia. And you said there's pretty much people from every continent there. So you're giving live one-on-one personal piano lessons while you were there, as well as online piano lessons. Is that right?
Yes. Well, actually, I was giving online lessons to students in the United States because I had some here. I was giving online students occasionally to students in Saudi Arabia because women can't drive there and driving can be kind of dangerous. And so some of my students had a commute, and when they couldn't get a driver, then I would give them a Skype lesson. And then one of my trips back to the United States, I got an infection that prevented me from flying for a few months. And so I started teaching my students in Saudi Arabia from the United States to keep them going because I couldn't travel.
Yeah. Well, so, talk about giving you flexibility, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it's one of the things I think that teachers don't think about, because, like, let's say you are going through chemotherapy, for example. If you feel well enough to teach, but you can't be exposed to other students, and so having Skype lessons as an alternative gives you the ability to continue taking your students without exposing yourself to risk. Or if your students are sick, or if you're sick, then it's a really good vehicle for that kind of teaching.
And in Saudi Arabia, if piano lessons weren't really common and music education isn't in schools, how do people get pianos? Are there piano sellers?
Well, there are, but when you go to a showroom in the United States, you choose the piano, and then they have a bunch of movers who move them in the tuning community. In Saudi, it's kind of like you shop from a catalog and they ship it in. And when we first got there, it was right around the time of the Second Gulf War, and I was teaching group lessons because there weren't very many teachers. I had ordered a whole bunch of electronic pianos, and they got delayed because the shippers didn't want to go into the Gulf until it calmed down a little bit. So you had to wait for getting whatever you're going to get at that point. The tuning is not a profession that you have in Saudi Arabia. So tuning acoustic instruments was quite challenging for a lot of people. And one of the tuners was deaf, and he wasn't telling his clients. So the clients didn't hear it. And so you could go over to their pianos, and you would know that it was tuned by this particular gentleman who had access to this fabulous group of Saudis who had pianos. But and also in Saudi Arabia, the music that's often played is played on an oud, which is kind of like a lute, and it's not fretted, and they use quarter tones. And so what sounds out of tune to a Westerner doesn't necessarily sound out of tune to a Middle Easterner.
Wow. I mean, there are just so many things going against you in even
Yes, but then
living in the country.
there's nothing going for you, because there's a real desire for people to learn musical instruments. And so when they find out you're a piano teacher, I didn't advertise. I had clients. I stopped doing a waiting list because it became overwhelming.
Wow. I think I could talk to you and ask you so many more questions about Saudi Arabia, but that isn't the focus of today, although it kind of is. What I want to talk about is how you went about the online teaching. And as you know, we've had a number of guests on this month who've talked about the technology and things like that. So we can cover that just basically in regard to what you use and what you've seen work. But I think one of the most important things we can talk about with your experience is cultural difference. And so while the first few podcasts of this month have talked about, what to do when it's a snow day and if you're not too well, teaching your local kids or teaching kids in your same country, but you've got some experience now of teaching in other countries. So what are some of the factors that we haven't really explored in regard to this cultural difference and things you've got to keep in mind?
Okay, so one of the big cultural differences that I see is that, particularly in the United States, in December, everybody does Christmas recitals. And, Christmas music is big. The piano methods all have their Christmas versions of it. Now, when I got to Copenhagen, I was so excited because my favorite Christmas music was actually provincial French carols. And we lived down the street from the French school, and I was like, oh my gosh, I've got French students. This will be their music, and I'll really make a connection with them. And caroling is not a tradition in modern day France. So none of my students knew carols. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I had to kind of change my American, this is a great thing, to more European style of teaching. So then when we got to Saudi Arabia, well, Saudis don't celebrate Christmas. They have Ramadan and Hajj, and they have their Eids, and they are not tied to December. They move around through the year. And Christmas is a Christian religious holiday. So, my ideas of, oh, Christmas music just totally broke. And so you see a lot of people doing Christmas recitals in the United States, and some teachers sometimes get a little upset that their students don't want to do Christmas music, or their students don't want to do this kind of music, and then or they don't even want to be involved with that particular recital because it goes against their religious beliefs, which is totally fine. And I think when you start teaching overseas, it's not your culture that really matters, it's the culture of your students. So you don't teach Silent Night to Muslim students unless they are okay with it. You always want to get consent about the music that you're teaching, particularly if it has a religious a religious bent. Jingle bells is universal. So it seems like you could teach jingle bells and the secular carols very easily, especially for, you know, even We Wish You Merry Christmas is very popular because I think jingle bells, We Wish You Merry Christmas, and Silent Night are universal. Everybody knows them.
They're almost folk tunes, aren't they, sort of thing?
Mm. Yeah. Happy birthday is generally okay. But again, not everybody, there are a few people that don't do birthday things. And so you don't do birthday stuff. And so I think when you're, the majority of students want to learn how to play the piano because they want to learn how to play songs and songs that relate to their culture. Mm. And if you give them songs that relate to your own culture, then that's not really what they're looking for. Another thing that I found was really interesting is in the Middle East, there's a Lebanese singer named Fairuz. And she's like the person that everybody in the Middle East, whether you're Saudi Arabian or there's also an Egyptian singer, Umm Kulthum. And these women are iconic. And so you might have a lot of resistance in Middle Eastern culture to taking piano lessons, particularly if they're Western piano lessons. But I found that if I could make some arrangements of some of these Middle Eastern songs that are universal, it was no longer about taking piano lessons. They were learning how to play Fairuz. And that was huge. And you know, my adult students, I have Saudi adult students, and in the beginning they were like, oh, I don't want to learn this. This is what my parents listen to, or this is, you know, baby music or whatever. But what they found is that when they went home and they played that, it legitimized their own lessons. And so, because that's another interesting cultural thing. If you're coming from a culture that doesn't celebrate music, doesn't teach music in the school, and then there's some political reasons why music is not really up there, you don't have people saying, oh, my son is doing this, you know, getting everybody around the piano to show them off. So they're not getting a lot of support from home. There's not like, oh, great, this piano student is doing wonderfully at home. They have to kind of be self-starters. Interestingly, though, the Lebanese are very culturally in tune, and you get students' parents who say, I want my kid to play the Fierlis. Mm-hmm. And so they're not taking piano lessons, they're learning how to play the Fierlis. And I've seen this happen over and over and over again where the kid learns a little bit of the Fierlis, often not very well, and they get drug out in front of the family. This is my prodigious student, and here they're playing the Fierlis. So the Lebanese are a little different than the Saudis and some of the others. But you have to keep that in mind that they might not be getting tremendous support at home. They don't get, they don't have the, you got to do your piano practice at home. They're not getting support from their friends. I had students who didn't even tell their parents they were taking piano lessons because they were raised religiously. So you just don't do that. And so it's kind of like the secret life that you're leading when you teach piano lessons. It's not broadcast.
So there's obviously some challenges in regard to the cultural aspects, but by no means insurmountable. What are some of the advantages of going outside your own country for online teaching then?
Oh, well, you know, I think there's huge demand, as I said, for English-speaking piano teachers in countries outside of the United States. In fact,
why do you say that? How have you found that to be the case?
Well, because there aren't for example, in Saudi Arabia, it's difficult to get a visa to work in Saudi Arabia, and certainly to get a visa for music teachers is unheard of.
Okay.
So you wouldn't go there specifically to work. So I was over there because my husband had a job, and so I happened to be a piano teacher, and I was coming over, so I knew what I was doing. A lot of the teachers who are over there are people who know how to play the piano who get asked, can you teach my kid? I mean, there was such a demand that I had, at various points, I had between 50 and 70 students. And when I left, I had 18 teenagers. And what I did is I started a teenage mentorship program where I had the teenagers take on the 5 and 6 year olds. And so in my whole studio, there were probably 100, 120 students because between all of the teenagers, my students, and so on, it just, because that's what you had to do.
Wow.
Otherwise, because I think you have an opportunity when you're teaching the very young ones, but it seemed like my time is better spent in coaching and mentoring and teaching more advanced students. And so it was fabulous. I mean, teenagers, I hate to they did a better job with their students, because by that time I had learned on them than they had done, that I had done with them when they were at the same age. Because I had been teaching them, I'd been teaching in Saudi Arabia for 15 years, and I had quite a few students who had been with me from the time that I started. Now they're off in boarding schools or college.
Yeah. And now you're back in the States now, right?
Yes. I'm in Washington State on the West Coast.
And you're continuing to teach some of those students who are in Saudi Arabia online, is that right?
Well, I plan on teaching only students online in Saudi Arabia or in other overseas countries, because again, it's easy for Americans to, Americans can find music teachers anywhere, and they also have the culture to go out and look for music teachers. So a lot of the students in Saudi Arabia were taking Skype lessons with other, you know, for other instruments. So I feel like I'm doing a more of a service to Saudi, to the international expat communities over there than I would be over here. Plus, though, that you've got time zone issues, right? So when you're teaching in your local community, piano teachers have really terrible hours. You have to be teaching at the time that your students are home from school, right? Because you can't teach in the mornings, or you have to teach certain kinds of clientele during those times. And so if you have children yourself and you have to make a compromise between, are you going to be with other people's children or your own children? So Saudi Arabia right now is 11 hours time difference apart, or no, 10, and then you've got daylight saving. Saudi doesn't have it, but we have it here, so it'll be 11 in the winter. So I can teach in the mornings and then have normal afternoons. Mm-hmm. It's a little early. My first students will be around 6:15 a.m. here, but I'm a morning person anyways, for that. That's not a big issue. So if you were on the West Coast and you teach East Coast students, you have a morning where you work, and then you have an afternoon where you're home with your kids. Or if you're teaching European students or whatever, you can make that time zone difference really work for you.
Mm, absolutely. And I mean, the biggest time of the day when piano teachers are often not busy, when they could be teaching, is during the middle of their day. So to find somewhere in the world where students, that's their after school time, that would be perfect.
And there is also the coolness factor, because, you know, I know you had Mario Ayero on and he was talking about Internet MIDI.
Mm.
And I've been using Internet MIDI and have known George and Mario and all of the whole Internet MIDI group for, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so. And there is nothing cooler than connecting your piano in Saudi Arabia and then playing your student's piano on the West Coast. Mm. Or vice versa. There's just something that's unbelievably awesome about being able to be half a world away and actually play the other instrument. So, you know, the technology, because when we first came over, we had dial-up internet connections and this wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah, that's right.
And when I started, I have a small publishing thing. When I started, you couldn't do digital downloads and, you know, shipping and storing and printing and producing. And it's quite expensive and it requires logistics. And it would have been totally impossible to do digital downloads even 5 years ago. And then you've got companies like Music Notes, and it's so much easier to have access to legitimate music than it was just 10 years ago. So mm-hmm. getting materials overseas is much easier. And then, as I said, there's this coolness factor. And also, I really love my students and I love teaching. So it's very fun.
Mm. If you were listening, wondering what we were talking about just a moment ago with Internet MIDI, episode number 53, I was talking to Mario Ahero about some of the high-tech things you can do with your piano teaching online. So do check that out, timtopman.com/episode53. Okay, so we've talked about, you know, time zones and things like that. Let's say you're in America and you'd really like to teach someone in, I don't know, Europe or somewhere like that. How do you actually go about being found in these other countries? You say there's a big need for it, but how do you get yourself out there?
Okay, so I think the way you get yourself out there is similar to the way I got myself out there in Copenhagen. And that was, all of these countries have expat communities. So most European countries will have them. Middle Eastern countries, even Asia and Africa, will have groups and organizations for expat women. And so when I started my teaching studio in Copenhagen, I advertised in the American Women's Group in Copenhagen. And so they have little magazines and brochures and stuff. And you can find those. I mean, again, now at the time it was a, you know, printed, like, you know, like a printed thing that's been folded in half and stapled together with your address handwritten in, and it was mailed. And now you can go on to Facebook groups and online groups, and you can put yourself out there as an internet teacher that teaches, and you can look for specific clientele. I also take online lessons, and my piano teacher, Dave Frank, is a jazz improv guy in New York City, and he teaches all over the world. And he put little videos of his jazz improv stuff out, and that attracted people to him. And then through that, he got his online teaching. And he's also taught students in the Middle East. He thought it was wild that he was teaching me over there, but he had students in Syria and Singapore and whatever. And so once you start getting into this international online business, you'll find that, you know, in the West, you're quite spoiled and it's easy to find that stuff. But when you're over in Africa or Asia or the Middle East, it's not as easy to find the kind of teaching. And also there are so many different things that people specialize in. Like Dave is specialist in jazz improv, and there aren't that many jazz improv teachers. So I'm going to continue taking lessons with him because I wouldn't be able to find that locally. Mm. And so if you are a niche market teacher who teaches one specific area, then you have the ability to find that niche in whatever country you're looking for.
Mm. Great tips, Sarah. So finding the expat community, finding the American or the Australian teacher or the international school or whatever it is in those countries, and therefore making connections with other English speaking and people potentially looking for lessons. I think that's a great way to go about it. But I think you're right. Having an online presence, having videos of your teaching and a web, obviously a good website and things, is probably just as crucial.
Yeah, because you want to have people directed to you. Another thing too that I've been, you know, because I've been watching, this is an area that interests me. So I watched your videos and, or I listened to your podcast, and I've been following other teachers, is a lot of the times the teachers are thinking about, how am I going to get this? How am I going to find students? How am I going to do these kinds of things? And I think we need to, instead of just thinking about how is it going to benefit me, really figure out how you can have the most awesome online teaching experience you possibly can have. Because, you know, that's how you don't get one student. That's how you get lots of students, because word of mouth is the best way to get that kind of thing. And, you know, if you think about it, you can only teach a certain number of students. So before you even start going online, you have to decide, how many students am I actually looking for? Because if you start thinking, if you don't even address the question, then you get overwhelmed because there's so many different things that you need to do. But if you narrow it down to say, gee, I think I can manage 10 students, then 10 students out on this planet who are a match for you, that's quite easy to find. Mm-hmm. But if you're not thinking in terms of that, you're thinking, oh, I feel so overwhelmed because I have, you know, I'm going to try here, 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 and here. You'll get overwhelmed, but it's not as difficult, because all you need is one student who loves you, and then they have a brother, and so the parents are going to love you, and then they have friends, and then pretty soon you've got your studio and you'll be turning people away.
Mm. So we've talked about some of the benefits in regard to time zones and scheduling. Are there any negatives you found, any things to really consider before you go into online teaching?
Well, I mean, there's the negative of 6:15 a.m. So depending on where your students are, you have to be prepared for that. I think everybody has experienced crappy internet, I mean, bad internet connections.
Fine.
Where you get disconnected or delays or whatever. And I know that one or two of your clients or your interviews earlier had said about having wired connections rather than using wireless. And then the other thing too is that, you know, you've got to think that when you look in the mirror, that's your tech support. And when you look in the mirror, not only is that your tech support, but that could be your students' tech support. So your students are often initially going to be just as confused about how to get everything connected as you are. And what works in one country may or may not work in another. So, for example, some governments don't care for Skype. And some of their telecoms don't care for Skype because Skype is free. So It's undermining their business. And so if you're only comfortable with Skype and your students can't get it, then you're going to have to think about FaceTime or Hangouts or Facebook Messenger now has a video thing. And then I'm experimenting with a couple alternatives. You know, I have a Beam, which is it's way cooler than I thought it would be. It was a Kickstarter program for a few years ago, and I only pulled it out of the box this summer, and my husband is still in Saudi Arabia. He's going to be commuting, and it's this robotic thing that you... So
it's a robot, isn't it? I looked at it online when you mentioned it to me. It looks crazy.
It's a remotely controlled robot where my husband in Saudi Arabia drives it around my house. He's the one with the controls. And the reason why I wanted to investigate something like this is because it's not on a Skype network. You know, it's on the Beam network. And so if a country is blocking one thing or another, for them to go after Beam is ridiculous. It's just such a small company. I'm also looking at security cameras, because if you get security cameras, well, you can check on your dog when you're off doing stuff and you're doing it wirelessly. So I was thinking, well, what if you got a security camera and just gave your students the code to that thing so that they could connect over the security camera? And looking at them, I haven't actually bought them yet, but they have really good cameras and a lot of them have audio as well. So I thought, well, if you're going to have problems with Skype, you can go off into these little...
So just to confirm, you're suggesting, you know, putting one of those security cameras over the piano and
exactly.
They could link in with it somehow. You're just thinking of yeah. alternates and options. Yeah.
Yeah, because and I'm very fortunate because I tell my students that we're the piano science learning laboratory. And so we're going to try things, and some things are going to be awesome, and we're going to be like, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe it was that cool. And other things are going to be like, oh, that was really
Which is great. Look, I love experimenting, and I think one of the things you've got to be when you're doing online lessons, you've got to be flexible. You've got to be ready to change. You've got to be open to laughing at yourself. You've got to be open to going, you know what, this isn't working.
Yeah, and you have to convey that to your students. You know, like when something goes wrong, you have to be, your students have to have the similar, you know. And I think one of the things that you can do when you're teaching online is set it up, you know, like, there might be one lesson out of 20 that's going to be really awful.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're going to spend the whole time connecting and disconnecting, and it's just going to be frustrating. And that's just part of, you know, you kind of plan for that. And then when it happens, you kind of keep an eye on, well, why did it happen? And how can I avoid that in the future? And then, as I said, online piano teaching science laboratory, anything that we do here can be shared with others, because it's such a cool thing to do. And there's so many students and so many people who want it. For example, I found that sometimes, you know, you get this delay or you've got wonky sounds because, you know, some students have acoustic pianos and you can't use internet MIDI the same way. So the quickest, easiest, cheapest way to check your internet connection that's as low tech as you can get is a metronome. You have your students set a metronome for 60 beats a minute, and then you can look at a clock and see how delayed or how even the thing is. Because sometimes you can't tell whether it's your student who's off or whether it's the connection. And so, you know, just by teaching for a while, and then I teach my brother's kids, and I was telling him today that I'm so thankful I've been teaching them, because every problem that you could possibly experience from online teaching has happened with them. You know, like... materials, we had to send stuff over the internet, and if my brother didn't print them out in time, then you spent the whole lesson waiting for stuff to print out and then it's over. Or pens, you never want pens anywhere near the piano, because if the kid writes in the music, you know, in pen and it's wrong, then yeah. You know, particularly younger kids, they take the eraser, they go like this, and then hold it up for you and there's holes in your music and you turn it over if you're missing things. And then they have to print it out again, and it takes forever, you know. So I have a whole list of workarounds on that. The music that you use is actually quite important online, because if you can't point, your students have to be the ones who are writing in everything, and a lot of music is really compressed. And so you want to have, you know, like I said, there's so many things that we've, because I've been doing this maybe for – 5 years, and every time something goes wrong, it goes in a little list, and then we think, okay, so this didn't work, so what are we going to do differently?
And I think you actually you shared an example of some of your music with me, which was great because it was very step by step for the student. It was very, very clear, so you could easily. It's not like third line down, fourth bar across. It's that one. Point to that so I can see. It was actually like just cut that bar out, and here it is here. Have a look at that sort of thing.
Yeah, and then I found too that this was actually really interesting. When I started teaching my nieces, they were 6 and 8, and rhythm. When I teach in person, I would write counting numbers in their books myself, and so I knew that they were correct, and I understood how to align beats and all of that. But when they started, and this is a really great exercise, and if you can do it, super. Having them write their own counting numbers in the music. But what happened was when they were young, they didn't understand how to do it. They would write it in, and I'd have them hold the music up so I could check it. And inevitably, it would be wrong. And so then, they
You're
needed help.
trying to describe where to put that, where that number should go.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the problem with that online is that it's incredibly time consuming. So if you have a 30-minute lesson, then 20 minutes of your lesson is instructing them how to erase one and put it in the right place verbally when you can't point is really challenging. And so I found that if I give them scores that already have the counting numbers in them, then it was incredibly helpful for making the lesson as tight as possible. I was listening to Melody telling you how being an online teacher really tightens up your lessons. It makes you a better teacher because you have to be a lot more organized. You have to have a lot richer language. You have to be more descriptive. And you have to be able to convey those ideas verbally 100% of the time because you don't have the alternative pointing. And I found that I was writing in counting numbers to all of my students' stuff anyway. So if I just did it in one score once. And then the same thing with the fingering numbers. Again, younger children don't have small handwriting. And so if you write in finger numbers, or if they wrote their own in, by the time that they were done writing and counting and fingering in the areas that they needed to, you couldn't actually see the notes anymore. And so that wasn't working. And I found also that if you put in the fingering numbers in the middle of the piece as well as the beginning, then they could pick up from any place in the whole piece and they would be able to get it correctly. Otherwise, you have that issue of going back to the beginning and then playing to the part with it that you need to work on. And they would do that to figure out where it is. And then they would write the numbers in, and as soon as they write those numbers in, usually they're written above the notes, and so they're looking at the numbers, and you can always tell when they're looking at numbers versus reading notes. And so I thought, well, I'm doing this anyway, I may as well do it this way, and then send them the scores, and it makes it a lot easier for both of us in terms of teaching. And then the step-by-step stuff is really good because the step numbers, when I say go to step one, there's no question. It means step one. And so it's organized in such a way that it makes the online teaching as efficient as possible.
I think this is absolutely, I mean, this is, you've hit the nail on the head with one of the biggest issues that come from online teaching. A lot of people worry about, you can't touch your student or physically move their hand or anything like that. But just the communication, in my experience, I remember in the teaching I've done, just getting a student to look at the same bar. And I was teaching an adult. Like imagine it with young children. So these are just fantastic, fantastic tips. We really appreciate it. Is there a chance we could share even just one page of your
You can
example?
share. Well, the one I sent you can share the whole thing because, again, when I do stuff, I am very fortunate because I can change it if it's wrong or if it didn't make sense or if there's a problem with it. And so that particular one, I think we did the steps from the end.
Right.
So you start at the end and you go step by step all the way through the piece. And that was a really interesting exercise too, because usually you play from the beginning and go to the mistake and go back to the beginning again. The steps prevent you from doing that because you have to flip a bunch of pages, and so you go back to the beginning of the step rather than the beginning of the piece. But going from the end of the piece, then they would, it's easy to teach that way in person. But what I found when I was looking at the music is that often they put all the finger numbers on the first page, because when you get to the repeated sections, then you have to write them all in again. And so this way we were playing around with, well, how easy and how much would this make it easier for a student to learn the whole piece without getting bogged down in the middle? And so if you want to share the whole thing, that's fine.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because that was an experiment. I think we have one mistake in a clef, you know, like you go from single clef to, or, you know, two treble clefs to a bass clef, and the bass clef didn't get, there's something like that.
Yeah. And look, I think, I mean, it really is just for an overview of what you can do, just to give teachers an idea of the sorts of ways that you can refine that teaching.
Is, you know, what I would do before going into this detail is I would, a lot of the music that I have, I would just write on as a PDF, you know, like edit the PDF and put in the notes. And again, you're kind of limited by what the students have. So now you've got iPads and tablets and stuff. And so if you have, there are lots of editing programs or Fourscore that you can use to edit in your music, and then you can share annotated scores with your students, which does the same thing, you know, because it's, but again, you have to be organized and get yourself up to speed on that technology before you can start sharing it with your student.
Is there a way that the student can have an iPad with music open, you can have an iPad, and you can write on your score and have it show up on their score? Do you know?
I don't know. I think that there are like screen sharing things that you could do, or, you know, like with Skype, you can share the screen, and if you're sharing the screen, you've got something, then you can, and I haven't, I think this was also discussed. A friend of mine here has an iPad Pro and they're awesome.
I know, they're so good. I can't wait to get one.
Because, and she was showing me that with what she was doing with her students is that, because with the iPad Pro, you can make the score really big, so you can write in it, and she was using Fourscore, and so then she would send those scores over annotated. As far as in real time, I think the technology is just a year or two away, but I haven't found it yet, and I'm looking, because I think that that would be incredibly useful. But again, you have to consider iPad Pros or even iPads are kind of expensive, and not everybody has them. And so that was one thing about teaching in Saudi Arabia. You know, it's kind of a, the expat community, you don't go to Saudi Arabia unless they pay you to do it. But not all communities are like that. And then I had German friends, and iPad technology at that point was not, it wasn't as big as it is in other parts of the world. So depending on where you are, that's another thing. You can't make assumptions on the kind of technology that your students are going to have. You know, I think the simplest thing is a Skype connection and a piano, which will get most people. And if you're in the expat community, that is an advantage, because they're already accustomed to Skyping with people.
Definitely.
You don't have to bring them up to speed on that.
Let's just talk scheduling for a moment too, because I'm sure you might have a couple of tools or tips on that. And I should mention too, when it comes to time zones for all these podcasts, I do a lot of time zone things. And I use Time Buddy, which is a website, and also time.is, I think it is. Oh, I should check out. They're my two kind of go-to. Yeah, time.is and Time Buddy for just converting time zones and things like that. It's worldtimebuddy.com. But do you have other ways that students can schedule things with you?
I'm actually in the process of, again, we're trying things to see what works best. When I was in Saudi, I used Studio Helper, because I was managing my schedule and their students, and my students and my teenage students and their students, and so I needed to have that.
Studio Helper is music teachers helpers version for studios, right?
Yeah, it's music teachers helper studios, but I think music teachers helper would have been sufficient. But I had a problem with the time zone, because when it took it into Google Calendar, it always seemed to be an hour after daylight savings, because Saudi doesn't have daylight savings. So you had scheduled this with Calendly.
Yeah, I really like Calendly.com. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so I want to try that out to see if that's possible. Google Calendars actually does a pretty good job. Just in basic, you can make the appointments, and it does really well with the time zones as well. So that's a cheap, I mean, it's free, basically. And there are some plugins that you can get for WordPress sites. And I had a student who was taking Spanish lessons with a woman in England. And this is a man who lives in Saudi Arabia. And her scheduling, she had some WordPress plugin that was working there. So I'm, again, fortunate. I've got students who expect that we're going to have some hiccups and experimentation in terms of scheduling the time thing. So my the way I'm structuring the lessons is there's the Hajj in Saudi Arabia and then Eid. And so, you know, that's another thing. The calendar and scheduling, it has to be, and it took me a while to figure this one out, the schedule and the calendar of the country that your students are in. Okay, so if everybody is gone for the Hajj, don't schedule lessons for the Hajj and the Eid thing. You know, that just is stupid. And
the Hajj is a religious holiday, isn't it?
The Hajj is, it's when people travel to Mecca. But the Eid is after, and so the whole country shuts down. And the majority of my students went to one particular international school. So you grab that school calendar and you set up your lessons to that school calendar. Because, or you need to have the school calendars of the students that you're teaching. Because otherwise, especially in expat communities, people travel. And so they'll be gone for this vacation. And it's a vacation, so we're going off to this country. And if there will be a few people who hang around for those vacations, but because it's a vacation, the parents and the kids are kind of not on the same schedules. And so you schedule your lessons and nobody shows up. So, and that's especially true in the international communities because of this whole going back to their home country, traveling the world. That's one of the reasons why they're there. When I was teaching in the U.S., that wasn't the same issue. You know, maybe people were off during the summer, but it wasn't these particular vacations over the course of the year.
Yep. Okay, so we've got some scheduling tools, and look, it's going to be trial and error, and I love how much you talk about your studio as being a lab. I do the same with mine. Just try new things out, see what works. What about billing? How do you go about that?
Well, I've got a kind of an unusual situation because my husband's still in the country. So I can actually bill my students and have them pay him if they don't want to do anything online.
Right.
However, I use PayPal. Yeah. And again, international students use PayPal, so that's easy. You can also do wire transfers or bank transfers. Again, when you have students who are international, they're quite accustomed to doing this because they're often handling billing issues in their own countries. And so the billing is... It's really, again, seeing what your clients are comfortable with and then working with them on what they're comfortable with, because there are so many of these little fiddly things in the beginning. Once all the online stuff is working, then you know, this is just this little bit of a learning curve at the beginning. But once you get it set up, then you just continue and it's not a big issue. But you're dealing with different cultures. You're dealing with people who are nervous about, I've never had online lessons, I don't know how it all works. And so the more things that a teacher can do to make it easy for the clients, then, you know, then when they talk to their friends, oh, I'm taking online lessons with so-and-so, and it's great, you know. And I think once you've got your clients and you're teaching them online, everybody's really happy and excited. But it's that initial, I'm not sure whether or not online lessons, I'd rather have somebody in the room. And my response to that is, well, yes, I would rather be in the room with you too, but it's a choice between online or nothing. So if you don't want lessons, that's okay.
Yeah. So what does your tech setup look like for most of your lessons at the moment? I know you're obviously always trying new things, but what's it? What's your go-to setup?
My go-to setup is I have a MacBook Pro. I'm using Skype. And I use Internet MIDI. And I connect that to my students who have electronic pianos.
Great. And
that's it.
Is that, that looks like a grand piano and acoustic behind you on your right?
A Yamaha N2 Avant Grand.
That's an Avant Grand. Yeah. Okay. So that's got the digital connectivity.
Well, yeah, it's got, you need a USB to, a MIDI to USB connector to connect it.
Yep.
If you have something like, I use Clavinovas in Saudi, and so that's just MIDI. That's a printer cable. It's pretty easy. And the reason I got this instrument is because we plan on using this as a vacation rental. If you want to come to play piano at a place, then this is good. You wouldn't, if you were getting started and you were thinking, well, I want to have online students and I want to use Internet MIDI. You do not have to use a high-end electronic piano because It's a MIDI signal. And I think probably Mario mentioned that when you're doing Skype, you're sending audio and visual signals. And those are big files. They get taken apart and then they get reconnected by the time they get to you. Where MIDI files and the technology that goes through these keyboards, they're really quick and they're tiny. And so what I found using Internet MIDI was that you could have terrible Skype and really clear sound. So even if you could barely communicate, what we would do in those cases is that on Skype, even if the video and the audio isn't working great, you can message and text, but you can still hear a really crisp, clear sound out of the piano. And you do not need to have an electronic piano on the side of your student because you can send the internet MIDI. It can come out of the computer speakers. And so you can still use the screen for internet MIDI. You can still show what key you're playing on the piano. There's a lot of stuff that you can do in terms of theory and scales and chords and all of that on their side, even if they're not connected to a piano.
And if you want to know more about Internet MIDI, then you can do a Google search for it, or again, watch episode 53 when Mario demonstrates that. And there's actually this YouTube of it being demonstrated. It's pretty cool. It's a little bit like having, Skype. This needs a big, thick tube to go through. So put all your Skype video through that, and then Internet MIDI is this tiny little pipe that's completely separate, which just connects directly between two instruments. It's a fantastic option for teachers who are doing more and more of this. That's great. All right, well, look, we're going to start wrapping it up. You've got a website, Teach Piano Online, as well. What can people find there?
Well, there's a blog about some of the things that we talked about. There's also a course on how to make video lesson makeups. And that, again, the same technology that you use for online lessons is the same technology that you would use for video lesson makeups. And what I when I record, I use ScreenFlow, which is a telescreen program. And I think that's the same program or the same company that does the technology and the webcasting that Mr. Vera was talking about. And so another thing that you could do with your online lessons, you can record them through Skype if you're using Skype, but you can also use ScreenFlow to record your lessons and so that your student can have an online, little video of what you're using. There was a program a few years ago called Give It 100. It was a website, and this woman had you uploaded 10-second videos every day for 100 days, and no matter what you were doing, presumably you'd get better if you did it every day. And I did that for a few different things. The site wasn't sustainable, but I learned that you could, after doing 100 little videos, you realize that when you're doing, this is kind of that flipped classroom that Mario was talking about, that when you create online videos for teaching purposes, you only have to demonstrate whatever you're doing once. And so you could actually get really rich videos by keeping them short and only showing once because the student can watch it over and over again and then they don't have to, it's up to them, not up to you. Keeps you the video short and gives you. So that's the thing that you can. But when after this, getting all of my students set up and figuring everything out, I'm going to be creating a video course on getting started with teaching online lessons in the international expat community.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for all of that. And in actual fact, this weekend we're doing a webinar with Brenda Hunting about teaching online. And actually, she's going to go into some of those options you've got of saving your lessons and actually charging people for access to them. So actually having a repository of lesson information that you could then even sell to students or share with them somehow online. So that's going to be the final part of this month's podcasts and blog posts on teaching online. Thank you so much for your time, Sarah. I really do appreciate it. Is there any last final little tips? I really, really appreciate that we've covered stuff like culture and things that we haven't talked about the rest of the month, but was there anything else that you wanted to mention before we wrap it up?
Well, I think the whole thing is that you have to make the online lessons as awesome as possible for your students. And how do you make sure that they're learning and that they're happy? Because happy students give you referrals, and happy students are way more fun to teach. And you have to think from the student standpoint, because inevitably there are going to be problems. And if you've got students who are looking for those things, then that's then those lessons are not as successful. Mm. But I really appreciate the opportunity, because I think this online series is extremely helpful for all of those people who are interested in getting started and feel a little overwhelmed by all of the stuff that's available.
Yeah, I hope that we've shown them the advanced stuff you can do, but we've also shown how easy it is to get started, and that was my intention. So if people have questions, are you happy for them to write a comment if they've got one on this podcast on the show notes here, and I can shoot you the question if I can't answer it? Is that okay?
That's perfectly fine.
Fantastic, because I know there might well be some people asking about expat and international questions. Yeah. So that'd be great. All right. Yeah. Thanks so much for your time. Really do appreciate it, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Super.
All right. Bye, Sarah.
Bye.